HarperCollins presents An Unsuitable Woman by Kat Gordon, read by Richard Jack.
To my son, Noah, and the Somerville girls, for everything. Prologue. Her heart stopped at 20:57 exactly. She had looked at her watch only moments before and asked the totals to turn on a lamp. She had been reading and hadn't noticed it getting dark until her eyes had smarted suddenly with the strain. It had been a warm evening, a warm end to a hot, sticky day that had wrapped itself around her, dampening her upper lip and armpits and the backs of her knees, and she was wearing a thin blue cardigan over the white dress. It made her laugh, wearing white, after everything that had happened, or maybe it made her cry. She stopped the totos again and asked for some tea. Her stomach was still delicate. Her whole body had changed since childbirth, in fact, but she didn't like to think about that. She turned her head towards the door, as if she'd heard a noise outside. A crunch and a low purr, but not an animal's. This was a car pulling up. She wondered for a moment if it was Theo. He often dropped by unannounced. She held the book up. She didn't want to see him. She didn't want to see anyone except the totos passing in and out of the shadows cast by the lamp. Through the screen door, she could smell the magnolia tree and the roses she'd planted. The sweetness of the flowers mingled with the sharpness of the lines that the totos used to polish the furniture, filling the room with a powerful haze. It made her feel tired. Or was that the sudden quiet? The cicadas had stopped their humming, and she couldn't even hear the water. Peace. A toto stood in front of her with the cup of tea, and she shook her head. She'd changed her mind. She didn't want the tea, she didn't want anything. "Go back to the kitchen," she said. "Or anywhere, just stay out of this room." She closed her eyes. The bullet went through the book first. She hadn't lowered it. Maybe that was the reason there was so little blood. Just a small, dark hole in her chest over her heart. When the totos found her, her eyes were open and clear. They said it almost looked as if she was smiling. Part 1, 1925 to 1927. Chapter 1. The station was big and crowded with no benches or stalls, just two signs, one reading Mombasa and the other upper-class passengers and luggage. Most of it was open to the hot November sun and the flies. After a few minutes, I found a porter and led him back to my family. My father mopping his forehead, my mother tapping her foot, and my 12-year-old sister Maud melting against the pile of trunks holding books and clothes and everything else that hadn't been sent on ahead to the new house at Lake Naivasha. "There you are, Theo," my father said. He waved our tickets and two pennies in front of the porter. "Load our luggage into the carriages. There's a good man." "Yes, Buana Miller," the porter said. He was wearing a thick navy jacket and trousers. As he picked up the first of our trunks, I saw he had dark circles under his armpits. He smelled different to the Africans in Tanganyika, less spicy and more sour. Our carriages were two square compartments with an interconnecting door and mosquito screens attached to the window frames. I sat next to the window on a green cushioned bench, and my mother and Maud sat with me. Smartly dressed train guards checked our tickets and bowed to my father as he strode around the two rooms, explaining little features here and there. My father was an engineer, now director of the same railway that in 1896 he'd come out to Africa to build. I rested my forehead against the cool glass of our carriage window. We'd spent the last 2 weeks in Dar es Salaam, and if we were still there, I would have been stretched out along the jetty with Maud and Lucy, the daughter of my father's friends, soaking up the warmth of the wood beneath us and listening to the shouts of the men unloading fish and spices along the harbour. In front of us, moored dhows would be bumping gently against each other in the waves, and kingfishers dive-bombing the water in flashes of blue and orange. Across the bay was Zanzibar, home to the Sultan. One afternoon, I'd taken my father's binoculars out to look at the island, a stretch of brilliant white sand dotted with palms and matched by the whitewashed palace and fort at its edge. To the left, I could see an Indian banyan tree, alive with vervent monkeys, and behind that, the shaded labyrinthine streets of Stone Town. Children darted in and out of focus, rusted red iron roofs sloped upwards, and bedsheets, used in the place of curtains, flailed outwards in the breeze.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?